but instead of saying things like, what do you need right now? What should you get right now? What do you think you should be doing? Which just puts all sorts of demands on the student who has language challenges to come up with an answer in the moment. You could instead say something like, hey, it's time for math. Let's get your math book out together.
Welcome back to the Upper Grand District School Board Social Learning Road Trip. I'm Kristen Smith.
And I am Tara Ross. We are both speech-language pathologists who work at Upper Grand. And we are so excited to be chatting again with Linda Murphy, author of the Declarative Language Handbook. Over the last few sessions, we have talked about the areas of social learning that are supported by the use of declarative language. We have also chatted about who could benefit from the use of declarative language, which we have learned is almost anyone. Welcome back, Linda.
Thank you. Glad to be back.
So in this episode, we're going to take a deeper dive into making declarative language happen while discussing some scenarios that educators are met with in their classrooms on a maybe daily basis for some.
For sure. And what we decided to do was to make use of AI and take different features of students that we've encountered over the years where we feel declarative language would be a valuable strategy for us to try, and created case studies that encompass all of these different characteristics. So these two case studies we present today are not actual students, but a collection of features that we think are quite common, and we would love your input, Linda, on how we can best support them.
Sounds good.
All right, so here is our first case study. Our student is in grade 4 in a mainstream classroom and has some academic challenges. They have been diagnosed with ADHD but are not medicated. Assessments of his language skills place his skills at the moderate range of difficulty within a developmental language disorder. He has difficulties with specific expressive language, including sentence formulation and word finding or vocabulary difficulties. They face challenges in the areas of reading and writing. Reading assessments indicate that they are below grade level, struggling with decoding skills and fluency. Our student tends to avoid reading-related activities and exhibits signs of frustration when faced with reading tasks or lengthy written tasks. They will often need multiple prompts to begin to work, will wander the room taking peers' learning materials, and will frequently leave the classroom to be found hiding behind doors or hiding in the bathroom. They also may yell at staff to be quiet. If given the option, they would prefer to go on YouTube all day. The student also struggles with recess time, often struggling with playing games with their peers on the playground. So that's a lot, but we realize that many of our students are that complicated. They have that many different types of facets to who they are. So how could we use declarative language to create a safe space in the classroom to support a student like this and their abilities to start and stay in an activity?
Wow, there's a lot going on for this little student. So I feel for them. And I think, you know, one of the first things is just to enter with compassion for the student and understand the struggles that they are going through, and that it's going to be even harder in a busy, dynamic classroom environment. And I believe all kids want to be successful, want to be competent. And because there's so many things within the classroom that are going to be tricky for this student, I would probably want to be really mindful about the demands that I place on them, so that I do the best that I can to set them up for success. So this might be guiding them through a transition rather than asking them questions or placing demands. That might just help them better read the environment as it's changing. So for example, I know we talked about this in a prior episode, but instead of saying things like, what do you need right now? What should you get right now? What do you think you should be doing? Which just puts all sorts of demands on the student who has language challenges to come up with an answer in the moment. You could instead say something like, hey, it's time for math. Let's get your math book out together. Or, this is an example we used before, but I noticed the kids are lining up to go outside. Let's see if we can get your stuff together and I can walk with you there also. So it's almost like you want, I know we'll get into some of this in future episodes also when we talk about co-regulation, but in this instance, you might be thinking about using your declarative language to partner and support and scaffold to guide them through the parts that might feel tricky or hard for them or where they might tend to get stuck. I see also this little AI-generated student has some challenging behaviors where they might, leave or hide or something like that. And so one thing I really try and think about is that if there's a pattern of behavior and we see that pattern, we don't ever have to wait to be in the moment to address it. But using this style of communicating, what we might do instead is engage the student in a conversation at a time when they are regulated and just say something like, I noticed yesterday in such and such a class, you went to the bathroom and hid. And I'd love to understand that a bit more. So that I can help you feel more comfortable in the classroom, or so that we can help you feel comfortable staying. And it's almost like you use declarative language to create that engagement around problem solving. So when that moment is upon you again, you've taken the time to store those memories with the student. And this is also definitely building on Ross Green's work of collaborative proactive solutions, just where we really want to engage the student to figure out what's going on for them, what's their concern in that moment that's leading to this moment that feels like a challenging behavior, so that we can problem solve. But the communication or surrounding it all is declarative in nature. We're inviting, we're thinking together, we're remembering together, and then also helping to remember in the moment the next time it happens to pull out those strategies or ideas that maybe you had talked about together.
Yeah, I love how everything really does integrate together. Just with you mentioning Ross Green, I absolutely felt and heard that piece integrating so easily. I love the idea that we're using that episodic memory and creating those moments for that child, and the idea of the scaffolding that we are going to, again, learn more about through the co-regulation piece. Those are great, great strategies.
Yeah, and I also liked using our powers of observation to see those patterns and behaviors so that we can try and engage the student to use our episodic memory before we start to see those behaviors bubble up so that we can help them problem solve. So I'm wondering how we could use declarative language to support this student when he has left the classroom and is struggling to come back into the space.
Yeah, that's funny. This recently, this conversation came up with a school that I just did a consultation for. I think that if it is a student who has a pattern of leaving the space and the teacher is unsure what to do, but we know that this might happen again in the future, like I think it can be really helpful if there's other team members in the school that you could maybe call on just to help out in these moments where a teacher may feel scared or panicked or unsure what to do. Because I do understand, like, a classroom teacher to attend to one student who has maybe left and then also care for, the 15 or 20 who are still there. It's just really hard. So if there's any team communication that can happen, just so we can all support each other, I think that's really great. But then if you are that person who's trying to connect with the student who has left, we just want to think about connection first. So you might slowly approach the student. You might say, oh, I'd love to talk to you if that feels okay to you. You might want to get down at their eye level so they also feel connected to you and feel safe. And sometimes you can problem solve with them right there. Like, I want to help you feel comfortable. I'm unsure what happened. I don't quite know why you left, but I'd love to figure this out and help you feel better. Like, you could get into that language with them, but you also could maybe just be together quietly for a bit of time. And that could be okay because that student might be really working on regulating themselves, and a safe space and quiet might be what they need to kind of reset and feel comfortable re-engaging on their own.
Yeah, I love the idea of making that connection first before we go in and try to do a lot of problem solving with a student. And I know one thing that we as educators often struggle with is the quiet, like being together quiet in a space, allowing the child to have some time. Often, I think we want to jump in and do something, whereas just allowing that connection to happen through that quietness in that moment together, I think, can be really helpful.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So I'm wondering if we can switch over to our next student. Our next student is in kindergarten and is also in a mainstream classroom. They do not have a diagnosis, but there are concerns regarding their social-emotional well-being, including some possible trauma during their preschool years. Their communication skills appear to be age-appropriate, but the school team feels that the student may be struggling with understanding of oral language. The student is often dysregulated and has a one-to-one EA to support them in the classroom. And when they are dysregulated, they will throw objects and or hit the adults in the space. Staff are struggling to recognize those early signs of dysregulation, so it feels like the student goes from 0 to 60 quite quickly and often without warning. And within the classroom, during open learning activities, the student will often move quickly from one activity to another, often not spending or staying long enough in a task to engage in any learning. And being told no is often a trigger to dysregulation. And the student has difficulty with transitions between activities within the classroom.
Yeah, another little one who's struggling with all sorts of things.
For sure. But this is very common of what we see in our primary students, particularly students coming in after COVID who may not have had those preschool learning opportunities the same way other students did. How could we use declarative language again to support the student's ability to engage in learning tasks, which might be something that they haven't had a lot of experience with doing prior to entering kindergarten?
Yeah. So again, like I really want to think about, it could be like in one instance, it's the big picture, just like what's going on for that student throughout the course of the day. And sometimes on our end, it might look like the student goes from 0 to 60 really quickly, but what that means is just there's been a lot of internalized feelings or behaviors where things are building up, but we just haven't seen it. So again, I think to get better at supporting the child in the moment, we really have to carve out the time to talk with them and understand what's going on for them when we're not in a moment of crisis, because that's when we're going to get the most information. So if this is a student who comes in and tends to throw things, I would want to understand why, like what is happening for them that leads to that throw. So it could be something like, you know, I know yesterday when such and such happened, you threw your book, and I want to understand what was going on for you. Was there something there that was hard for you? I know we haven't got into these pieces of conversation yet, but with co-regulation, really what I always think about is the child feeling competent in that moment, or do they have a competent role? And sometimes we see those challenging behaviors when the child is not feeling competent. So part of it is going to be using declarative language to help them feel safe, to help them feel connected. But the co-regulation piece is going to come in just where we want to think about what's a competent role for this student at this moment in time. And usually if we can get that just right, then that supports their regulation within what we're doing. I think you see the behaviors and that sort of thing maybe when that little student feels like confused, or they're in over their head, or they don't know what's going on, or they can't quite get their footing. And then it goes off the rails, and we're just worried about backtracking and getting things back on track. So we can do the most, we can do the most work or the most help, I think, on the front end, where we're thinking about okay, what's a competent role for this child? So if we see that child throw something within the context of the activity they're doing, I'm going to think, okay, there's something about this that doesn't feel good to them. I'm going to quickly try and think on my feet and give them a different role that I know they can do. Something like that, but I want to connect them. Or of course, we always want to keep them safe too. So I'm going to be thinking about, is this environment right now too busy for them and it's too dynamic and they're overwhelmed with the sensory information coming in and that's the problem. And so these are just a lot of things that we might need to problem solve in the moment, which can of course be hard in the moment because we're processing a lot, but that's why too, I like to go outside of the moment as much as I can and reflect back on what happened, see if we can engage the student, and find those competent roles for them. And I know it's like all like broad strokes and it's not very specific, but sometimes what I might do in a classroom observation is just really think about a particular instance and then, you know, and think about all those little pieces individually to see how we might problem solve.
And I love that you're integrating in the co-regulation piece that we haven't had a chance to discuss yet, but we might revisit this case when we are at the end, sort of our co-regulation learning, because I do think that there are a multifaceted approach in what you're saying, even taking into account the sensory environment and, you know, possible triggers that are outside of the way that we're speaking. And I think all of that really is important in understanding our students. So thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. What would you think are some alternative declarative statements to the no that can be a trigger for the student in a way that we can maybe support their regulation?
Oh, right. So it's when so the idea is that the student doesn't like to hear the word no?
Yeah.
Right? So for example, if a student is asking me to do something and I know in my mind the answer is no, I know they're sensitive to that word, then I want to soften it while also helping them have an appreciation that no right now doesn't mean no forever. So sometimes instead of saying no, I might say, you know what, I love your idea. Let's think of a time that we can do it because I notice it's almost time for lunch and that doesn't give us enough time to do your really fantastic idea. Or I might say, we can totally do that, not yet because we have to do X, Y, and Z first, but then let's definitely do your idea. So I just plant seeds for the future so that they can see it's not a hard no, it's just, it's a future yes. Like that's kind of the message that I want to deliver to them. And then the other thing that can just be so very important for this idea is that when that future yes is a possibility in your world and you know that it is, if you can circle back to that student and follow through before they even ask you, then it just really and truly strengthens the trust that they have in you so that when you do have to say no or not right now, they really know that you will come back to it. You're not just going to forget about their idea. Like I think sometimes kids are worried they're going to forget the idea and they're worried the teacher's not going to bring it up again because for whatever reason or it's not important. So the more we can circle back to their ideas at a time that it is possible, it does so much for that relationship and helps them manage that future know that you might have to give, and also just supports their future thinking, which is executive functioning skills.
For sure. And I think you've already partially answered our next question, because this idea of the future, yes, and telling them, you know, their idea is great, but here is something else we're also going to try. It works into this idea of helping a student with transitions, because that's another area where we find it's very challenging for some of our younger learners. What kinds of additional ideas do you have to support someone with declarative language around transitioning from, let's say, a preferred to a less preferred activity?
Yeah, and I actually have a handout on this topic and a blog post on my website, and I think it's called something like reframing non-preferred tasks. Because I think if we just call something preferred or non-preferred, we're doing a disservice to the child in that moment to really figure out what's going mm-hmm. on. in my experience, it's not just that something's good and something's bad. It's that something's comfortable and familiar and exciting, whereas something might be less familiar, less competent, maybe a little bit tricky. And so as the educator, if we can just dig in a little bit to figure out, like, okay, we can see the student does not like this next activity, but if we can be curious about why or what parts of it might feel hard for them, or figure out how to scaffold the parts that we know are hard, then it can support that transition to be a little more positive rather than negative. So I think my job, or the thing that I think about always, always first, is just problem solve around that activity that is harder or less preferred in that moment in time. Yeah. And I think, again, the declarative language I might use is, okay, we're going to move from recess to reading. So I might think about giving information with declarative language around what that reading is going to look like. Like, I know that you love recess and I can tell you're having fun. When we do get to reading, I want you to know that we're probably going to read 2 pages of that book and then we'll be done, and then you'll have time to do your own thing again. Or I know we're going to be doing reading next, and I know it's not your favorite, but I want you to know that I will help you so that you feel successful. So you might be sharing information around when that activity that feels a little bit harder is going to end, so they can see the end, which again is that future thinking. Or you could give information around the specific support you might offer so that they know they're not in it on their own in this thing that feels really hard to them.
That's fantastic. And I think that there often is this sense of, I don't know what to say, because we don't know why it's not preferred. So this idea of being curious and trying to find out the reasons for how and why a student might avoid a task is a really important first step that sometimes I think myself, I even forget, thinking of my own children. So that's a really good reminder.
Yeah.
Thank you again, Linda. This has been fantastic. I think we have a really good starting point for understanding how we can apply declarative language. And we're going to continue that conversation in our next episode, where we take declarative language into the classroom and learn a little bit more about how we can use this on a day-to-day basis.
Excellent. Can't wait. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Social Learning Road Trip, a podcast presented by Upper Grand District School Board. For educators within our board, you can access show notes and links to our other podcast episodes on our SharePoint page under Innovation Lab. Other listeners can find our podcast and additional information on our parent website at www.ugdsb.ca/CLS parents. If you would like to find out more information about declarative language and co-regulation, please visit Linda Murphy's site at declarativelanguage.com.